was Desmond Dekker, 007 Shanty Sound, Town, excuse me. He was born on this day in 1941, and we'll play a bunch of his music during the course of the day, remembering him on this day, since he was born in 1941 on this day. We could listen to him for the rest of the day, but then we couldn't talk. I could do that, but wouldn't be a good idea. Since you're here listening to the Mark Steiner Show, and my co-host, Dr. Lawrence Brown, is in the studio. He's a political activist, public health consultant, assistant professor of public health here in the School of Community Health and Policy. Good to have you here.
Good morning. Always good to be here.
And Reverend Dr. Raymond Terry will be joining us shortly. He's a newly hired here at the Communication Health and Policy School at the University has led health experiential trips, which we'll talk about, with students around the world. Lenny McAllister was going to join us as a Republican commentator today, but Lenny at the last minute just called us and said there was a death in his family. Our sympathies go out to him. I don't know what happened, but we're looking for somebody now to take the kind of sort of anti-immigration side to this conversation. We're looking for a guest now, but maybe that'll be you at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Good to see you, Lawrence. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent.
Came back, had a good vacation.
Oh, man, it was fantastic in the Dominican Republic.
So let's talk, before Dr. Terry gets here, talk a bit about, one of the things, we hear our listeners' thoughts on this at 410-319-8888, on this immigration crisis. And before we get into we'll wait for Dr. Terry to jump into what's happening in Honduras. One of the things I found interesting in this was something that was sent to me by one of my producers the other day, which was seeing the right-wing TV, Fox TV, other places, Laura Ingraham, I think her name is. They're really making a push to bring black voices onto the airwaves,
right,
to say that that the United States government is investing in these children who are illegals, but not in children in the inner city. And I'm seeing that kind of as a push to reach out to the black world from conservative areas.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It sounds like a divide and conquer tactic. That basically, you know, somehow in the zero sum game way of thinking, that if we're doing something for one group, that we can't do something else for another group. And I think that, of course, America's failing youth, brown, black, red people in reservations and in the inner city communities and poor white communities. America's doing a terrible job overall. But we're the richest country on the earth, you know. So I don't think that it just because if we're, you know, if we're allocating our resources appropriately, we can handle these issues if we think bigger, if we think larger than some of the ways that we're thinking right now. And I think there's a lot of xenophobia going on, a lot of xenophobic tendencies. People are scared of losing something if somebody else comes into the country. And I think, so I'm not surprised to see Fox doing that, because it sort of gives them cover to spread their anti-immigration message, which is what is at the core of so many right-wing politicians these days. Matter of fact, they ran Eric Cantor out of office over immigration.
Because he wants to reach a compromise.
Right.
Of some kind.
Right. So, you know, that's what's interesting to me, is that even Republican politicians who do want immigration reform, they're being marginalized as well. So you're seeing, I think, this increasing polarization around exclusivity and xenophobia, saying we don't want these kids coming in.
Yeah, and I think though there is some reality to the divide in the black community and other communities over immigration. You know, the whole question of jobs, the whole question of where money's invested. It's often hard to put your hands around, because people don't want to deal with it, but it is there.
It is there, you know, but I think that for Fox News to try to exploit that divide, that's what smacks of divide and conquer to me, as a ploy to bolster their own position to begin with. And so I think the real issues that may exist between black and brown communities, those are issues that we have to have directly. That's not a verbal bout that needs to be mediated by Fox News. Fox News should not be the referee or the platform, right, to present those arguments. We should be having those arguments, whether it's in conferences or direct talks with each other, dialogue. That's the way that should take place. But when you introduce Fox News into it, then it's like, what is the real purpose and what's the real agenda behind that?
So it's true. I mean, this is a deep question here, because I think America is really conflicted over this question of immigration. But I think it's really people are conflicted about it, because at this moment we have 50,000 children who have been caught at the border,
mm-hmm.
Being held in these detention centers. You saw Carroll County erupt, not wanting to have one here in Maryland, in Carroll County, trying to stop it. Andy Harris threatening to, the congressman threatening to stop certain funding if that did happen. I mean, that's going on. There's an article I read that says if this continues in the same way it's doing now, that by September we could see well over 90,000 young people in trying to get across the borders of Mexico, mostly from Central America. And I think the United States is struggling for a response. I'm curious, you know, what a response should be.
It makes me wonder. I haven't heard a lot about dialogue with Honduran government, with the Nicaraguan government or El Salvador government, with these Central American governments where their folks are coming from. What sort of discussion is taking place so that if we are going to return a lot of the children where they do not meet refugee status, they do not meet asylee status, if we're going to return them to those countries or even work to prevent the influx of folks coming from these countries from leaving to begin with, there has to be some sort of dialogue established to say what can be done. What can we do and what can you do? Because I don't think that, you know, you don't want children going several hundred, if not thousand miles, you know, being led by coyotes and folks who are trafficking, you know, folks to get them across the border. You know, those journeys, from what I've been reading in the Washington Post and USA Today, those stories are haunting because children are exposed to all kinds of vice and vile behavior. So I think that, you know, putting folks through that sort of trek and journey, that's really, really dangerous. And so, of course, here in the United States, we're concerned about what the children are, you know, how they're holding up when they get here. But I think we also need to put more energy into helping people understand what that journey, how dangerous that can be, and how we need to make sure that people aren't exposed to danger like that.
So your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. I'm coming to those calls that are coming in right now. And we got a tweet here from Cokie Talks Trash. She says, it's a difficult situation. What can we do to support Central American nations so people don't send their kids? I think that's what you were touching on a bit here. And I think, you know, part of the problem is, you know, I was in some of the articles I was reading, and we've covered Honduras and some other places pretty intensely on this program, especially after the 2009 coup. And one of the things that, when you look at the gangs right now, the murder rates in Honduras are the highest in the world, like 400 and something per 100,000. Like the average in the United States or New York City is 5 per 100,000. Mm-hmm. And the gangs themselves, the 18th Street Gang, which is one of the biggest gangs in Honduras, the 18th Street Gang, 18th Street doesn't refer to a city street in some place in Honduras. It refers to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Because these were young people who were who were deported from the United States, came here as babies to the U.S., undocumented, became gang members, don't speak any Spanish, and deported back to El Salvador and back to Guatemala and back to Honduras, and created this gang structure built on the guns of the civil wars the United States helped promote in those countries, and using those same weapons now to turn the countries on their head. And the violence, the rape, the drug trafficking is just more than you can even fathom in this country, anywhere.
Right. Right. Yeah, well, you know, when folks come here to America, it's established through research that the first generation is actually healthier than their children and their children's children will be. And the thinking behind that is that, you know, when folks come here, they become exposed to the American diet. They become exposed to American culture. And so these folks who were deported back to those countries, they have been exposed to the violence in our society. They have been exposed to the gang behavior in our society. And so that's what they took back home with them. And I talk about, you know, the School of the Americas, how America set up these schools to help folks overthrow their own governments back in those countries. And so I think that the way that violence has been exported to these countries is certainly one of the dynamics that needs to be explored. But I think another, when you look at the economic situation, I've been to Honduras, and I know that there are like banana plantations there that are still operating. There are sweatshops that are operating. So the way that we have corporations, the fruit corporations, the ones who are making clothes, operating in such a way that they're paying, you know, and they're basically disrupting labor organizing. Matter of fact, they've killed in the past, I believe, several priests who were trying to work to bring workers together for labor justice. So when you look at some of these economic factors that play, even in Honduras, the way that the corporate sector is operating in a race to the bottom, low wages and exploitive labor practices, you're setting up a situation that allows this sort of behavior to fester. And then there's that coup that took place in 2009. So that government overthrew, I think, an existing government that was there, destabilizing Honduras. Again,
that the United States immediately recognized after the coup, not wanting this left liberal party to actually run the nation.
Right.
I'm going to go to the phones here, but first let me introduce the Reverend Dr. Raymond Terry is in the studio, newly hired here at the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University. And Dr. Terry has led health experiential trips to for students around the world and is an Episcopal priest as well. I have that right?
No.
I'm wrong about that. Different denomination. Sorry. I thought that's
I'm an Episcopalian, but I'm not a priest.
Okay, gotcha. One is only a Reverend Dr. Terry. That's what I mean. So welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Let me open the phones first, and then we'll go right back to Dr. Terry. 410-319-8888. Dave, your new vocation. 410-319-8888. Dale in Greenmount West, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good, Dale. Good to hear from you. How are you?
Hey, I'll be real quick.
That's all right.
I think the biggest tension in the black community and a lot of the Americans with this topic is that a lot of our fellow Americans and a lot of these businesses, corporate, large and small, are now dependent on the undocumented workforce that they have. Right here in Maryland, even companies that the president has visited, these companies have thrived and grown because the majority of their employees are undocumented and they're out of compliance with existing laws. And if the president was enforcing existing laws that would impact these companies, I bet you they would be complaining about that. So there are people on both sides, on the left and the right, that are being very selective on the laws that they want to force. It's all or nothing. We need to start going after these companies that are thriving right here in Maryland, and I could start naming them. And they're in a variety of businesses. They're getting wealthy, and a lot of their employee base is based on undocumented folks coming here, and they welcome them with open arms, and they're out of compliance with an existing law.
And I've heard that argument before, and I think that does exist to a large extent. I think we've seen it as well, Dale, and I think that is a factor here. But let me ask this one question, since, I mean, you think a lot. I mean, it's good to have you back on the air with us. It's been a bit. I'm glad you're rejoining us. What you would say to your fellow citizens about what should be happening with these 50,000 children, maybe now 92,000 children, they're thinking altogether by September, that are on our borders?
The children, the president's actually doing what the law requires them to do.
But what do you think should happen? The laws require a lot of things in the past.
They're entitled to a hearing in the Congress. If they want the hearings to act a lot faster, they should go ahead and give the administration money they need to make it happen.
So I want to explore that when we come back. We're going to take a very brief break at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts in the airwaves. I want to talk a bit about the president's ideas and how that fits in, and then explore what's going on in the heart of Honduras now that Dr. Terry joins us in the studio. 410-319-8888. We're going out with the Israelites by the great Desmond Dekker, born on this day in 1941.
Get up in the morning, saving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
The great Harry Chapin passed away on this day, and of course we'll play his music as well, that Cats in the Cradle. He's one of the great singer-songwriters in American history. And 1981 is when he passed away, and so you'll be hearing him during the breaks as well. We are rejoined here by Dr. Lawrence Bound, co-host, and you'll be hearing him co-hosting, substitute hosting on the show in the coming months. He's a political activist, public health consultant, assistant professor of public health here at the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University. Dr. Raymond Terry is with us, newly hired at the School of Community Health and Public Policy as well, and is a has led experiential trips for students around the world. Good to have you in the studio, Dr. Terry.
Thank you.
And number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can also log on to the Facebook page, which I'll check in a moment, 410-319-8888. So before we go to our next Paris, your next caller up, we're going to go right to you, and we'll come to you in just a second. But let me respond to what Dale, one of our callers, just said. And you know, the question of what to do with the 50,000 children now on the border of the United States. We did a program on this the other day, a debate. And by the way, I apologize. This was going to be more of a debate discussion about immigration policy. But one of our guests, Lenny McAllister, who is a Republican strategist, a really good, interesting thinker, called us just before we went on the air to say there was a death in his family. Mm-hmm. Our condolences go out to him. I hope he and his family are all right. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't join us. So I'm sorry he couldn't be here. But he's a regular guest in this program. I hope Lenny and his family are okay. But one of the things is, the two things. I mean, A, that the United, what happened last year, the United Nations Refugee Group said, UNHCR, UNCHR, said that what's happening on the border now has all the qualifications to be an international refugee crisis when it comes to these children. So that sets it up in a different precedent. And B, we're seeing children as young as 6 and 8 years old having to appear in front of this immigration court on their own, by themselves, and not an attorney there. So, and we're seeing people sent back also to these countries. And this is not just simply men coming across the border looking for work. And you can argue about that all day long, and we should argue about that and discuss what that means for America. We're talking about 50,000 children, teenagers and younger. And what should be our response? Are these refugees? If they have family in America, whether they're documented or undocumented, should they be allowed to go to their families? I mean, what should we be doing? This is a major crisis. We're not talking about a trickle of kids.
Well, there is a public health element that Dr. Terry would like for you to address, because there are these rumors that these kids are carrying swine flu, Ebola, dengue fever, that they're essentially diseased. Children coming over, so I'm wondering from a public health standpoint, how should the United States be addressing, you know, those type of assertions, and the children, how should we be addressing from a public health perspective?
First, I think we have to consider the fact that these type of sort of myths are going to emerge anyway, because they hunger is in Guatemala and El Salvador, basically considered to be what we would call poor countries. The thought is that there's rampant diseases. There are indeed some health problems, but I'm pretty sure that the Department of Health and Human Services, who have been charged with taking these individuals in and giving them shelter, and also perhaps I'm sure, in fact I know, they're also giving them some diagnostic treatment in the various shelters where they are. You have a number of NGOs, you have a number of what we call civil society groups who are also looking at the health needs of these individuals. So I don't think we'll have a widespread epidemic per se of the individuals that's having this. I think, again, it's probably more centered around the economic aspects of what's going on. I just bought basically five public health students, and also we had took 22 basic community health students from high school and junior high school over there. Of course, drinking water for them. We made sure that they didn't drink. The water was there because of problem. But all of us came back pretty much healthy, and I've done this for 3 years.
Right.
We're In fact, we also had through the Episcopal Church of Maryland, in the Diocese of Maryland, we had seven of them individuals come back with us this year to go to a youth conference. So they do have health services over there now. It's not as luxurious as the health services that we have here, but the sincerity with which the people work with scarce resources is incredible to address the in-country health issues as well as those that are relevant to people who may be traveling. The problem here is I feel that we have to take in consideration that these young people are trying to find something better. Their parents want something better for them. We take health services over to them, and it's pretty good services some of the people are able to do. The other part of it is that the sincerity with which the health care workers themselves are working in the country with scarce resources is just absolutely amazing.
So, you were in Honduras as well. I'm going to come back to your thoughts. Let me go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Join us for your thoughts on the immigration crisis at our border and what it means for our communities here. And my guess is there may be, since there are so many Hondurans in Baltimore City and El Salvadorians in this community and Guatemalans, that I wouldn't be surprised if many of those children on the border have parents here in the city of Baltimore. In the surrounding suburbs, 410-319-8888.
Please call if you're from that area of the world. We would love to hear from you.
We would love to hear from you. 410-319-8888. Sherman, you're on the air.
Morning.
Good morning, Sherman.
My question is, being here in Baltimore, just the inequity of in the black community of many mothers who would love to get out of the city, get out of an area for a better opportunity, a safer opportunity, just better quality of life for their children. She doesn't have the money. She can't just get up and move out of Baltimore for somewhere for a better life. And it just breaks my heart to think the hundreds of thousands of dollars per person that could be spent on these people to relocate them wherever they want to go for a better life, and wherever they stay they have someone, when that money for how many people would love to escape situations and environments that are detrimental and just such a challenge to survive and have a good life here, that those resources could be used to help those people escape those problems.
As opposed to using them how?
By the approximately $120,000 is the figure that I've heard, when it's all said and done, per person, when it gets done with the administrative costs of the health care placement, relocation on planes, trains, automobiles, housing, food, and all of these things for the illegals coming over, when that very well, those resources for how many people in urban communities would love to relocate and to a better place, better opportunities, better schools and everything like that, and they can't do it. To see this money being used on people who aren't citizens, people whose families weren't former slaves, families who didn't serve in the military and die for our country, that they should have the money to relocate to have a better life, instead of all of these resources and effort for people who are illegal. And it's just, there's people here that I just feel it should be used for.
And so one last question, Sherman. I'd like Lawrence to be the first person to respond to you. But so what would you do with those kids? Just send them all back?
I honestly feel that they should give them inoculations, give them, as far as some clean clothes, things like that, and to put them back, in fact, to the countries of their origin, after inoculating them, getting their health up to standard and things like that, because otherwise it's just going to continue, and they're just going to keep coming, and there'll be an endless stream. And on top of that, from a legislative and from D.C., just immediately just charge back the financial aid that we're giving these countries, because if we're giving all these billions to these countries, I'm just confused as we hear about the circumstances that they come from. All right, but why are we giving them that money then? So let us be more specific and targeted in our funding directly. If we have to set up offices related to our embassies in these countries, take care of it there. But it's just confusing, all these billions we give to them. If it's still this situation, it just doesn't all make sense.
Why don't you want to start, and then we can go to Dr. Terry, and I'll be happy to respond as well.
Sure. I think, when we look at the money that the president is asking for, I think it's $3.6, almost $4 billion. In the overall national budget scheme of things, that's not an incredible amount of money. I know it's hard to talk about $4 billion and say that's not a lot. But looking at what our total domestic production is, it's a very, very small percentage of what we're talking about. What needs to happen in Black America, when you read Ta-Nehisi Coates' The Case for Reparations, we're talking about an entirely different scale of funds that need to be directed to address the issues in Black America. When we look at the amount of money that we spend on the military, our global defense budget, over $600 billion, if we cut down on the amount that we're spending on war, the amount that we're spending on killing people around the world, setting up these military bases around the world, we would have a lot of money. If we only cut it in half, we would have $300 billion that we could take. We could address a lot of the issues with immigration. We could address a lot of the issues in urban America. So the notion that we don't have the money, that it's a zero-sum game, I think that's the thing that I think needs to be addressed. From the other side, being in Honduras, I saw going down the road, and you can attest to this, Dr. Terry, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, they were everywhere. The corporations, I mean, the little pulperias, the shops on the side of the road that had been set up, the entire shops were painted with Pepsi, painted with Coca-Cola. So if those corporations can figure out how to get into those countries, then I think we can figure out, we actually need to be looking at their model in some ways in terms of figuring out how can we infiltrate and spread opportunity, because that's what's not happening on the ground there. There's so much poverty. There's a lot of corruption in the government there, certainly with the one that took over in the coup of 2009. And so I think from the internal perspective, we would have to pay a lot of attention to how we interact with the people of Honduras there. That's the part that's lost when we talk about money first. That's not the biggest thing. The biggest thing is relationships. What type of relationship do we have with the Honduran government? What type of relationship do we have with the Honduran people? Because if our corporations are exploiting people there, and as callers have mentioned, exploiting workers here, then we're going to continue to see this influx until we change the relationship that we have here and abroad.
And I think that is true. It's a systemic issue of whether or not, when we talk about humanitarian relief, is it just a matter of us taking something over there and leaving it and then say, okay, go for it? Or are we actually talking about how do we really spread this term that we talk about so much in this country, democracy, and trying to provide opportunities for people to deal effectively in a free and sort of cooperative environment? One of the things I think is very key is to keep in mind that some of the individuals who are coming in at the border are coming over primarily because certain family members are already documented, and that they took the risk to get over here to become documented immigrants and also perhaps citizens. And now they're saying, I'd like to bring my children or my grandchildren, whichever it may be. Do we continue to disrupt this kind of family relationship? Is there a way in which the immigration law can at least expedite those who have families here that are legal and capable now of working and to take care of them while we try to work on some more, let's say, expert ways of curing jobs and helping the economy within the Honduran government itself, or Guatemala or El Salvador? A lot of these individuals are between the ages of, I would say, 15 to 17, and we know that some of them are also used for trafficking, which is a lucrative business.
A lot of the young people, they're now saying, the studies being shown on the board, a lot of these kids are being brought in by coyotes and others who are selling them for to be house slaves and sex slaves.
Mm-hmm. And quartels. Mm-hmm.
That's a huge piece of this. And I think the other part is people don't really get. I think about the horrible violence that didn't take place on our streets here in Baltimore City and other places around the country. And as I said, the average in America is 5 deaths per 100,000. Mm-hmm. But imagine living in a community where the drug cartels and gangs have taken over in part, not wholly, but in part because of our own policies here in America, mm-hmm. that where you have 400 deaths per 100,000 and living in those communities and people are being raped and murdered in those communities, that's many people are arguing that that is what is pushing this flood of immigrants into out of their countries and into where we live. Because it's interesting, where the drug war is not taking place in Nicaragua right now, there are very few people fleeing Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. But they're coming from Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala, where mm-hmm. it's just rampant. Mm-hmm. That's where it's taking place.
But, you know, if we wanted to, if we want to make a difference, we need to look at the clothes that we're wearing, look at the fruit that we're buying, and say to the corporations where we're getting our goods from that you need to raise the level of the wages that you pay, raise the protections that we have here. I mean, that raise the level of protections to what we have here in America,
mm-hmm.
right? Because instead of having a race to the bottom, if you raise the wages and raise the level of protections for workers' safety that we have here, if you raise that in Honduras, now you're decreasing the incentive to leave in the first place. Now people have the ability to provide for their families. Now people have the ability to stay out of the drug trade, stay out of the gangs instead of getting into them. But because we have this race to the bottom where people are getting paid as little as $3 a day, you're setting up economic forces. And you look at why immigrants came to America. The Italians, the Polish, the people in the middle and early parts of the 1900s, they came here because they wanted economic opportunity. So America's a nation of immigrants. But if in the home country things are going well economically, people don't have the incentive to leave as much as before.
I mean, as a child of one of those immigrant flows myself, that when people came here, they didn't have to have all this documentation. Mm-hmm. They came to the border, mm-hmm. and people met them at the border, mm-hmm. and they either stamped yes, come in, or you look diseased, no, go home.
Now, how does that play out racially, right?
Exactly.
You look diseased.
You look diseased, and go home. But I think that, let me go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Alan in Waverly, you're on the air.
Good morning. How's everybody today?
Morning. Very good, Alan. Good morning.
Yeah, I remember my old man used to say, "Dukes don't emigrate." Meaning, you know, if you got it good, you got it good. So anyway, the other thing is, I was a little disturbed, and I'll get over it. Somebody said, if you cut down the war here, you could do that there. Basically, that argument saying that if we had a cheaper war, everything would be all right here. But we need to keep on the a different tack, that war is bad no matter how much it costs, and helping our sisters and brothers is good no matter how much we pay for it. And I really appreciate the time being on the radio. So watch, you got the best show on this time spot. If I'm lying, $100 drop in your pocket for 20. I really enjoy it, but I think we need to address the idea that it's not just the cost of the war to the American people, it's the cost of war to human beings.
Oh, and I agree with that. I was the one who mentioned, I wasn't talking about war per se, because yes, we have spent $3 trillion on the global war on terror. I was talking about our national defense budget, what we spend to set up the bases around the world, to pay our troops and that sort of thing. I'm saying if we downsize our military and cut that spending in half. And of course, cut the wars. I agree. And of course, not just cut the cost from a monetary perspective, but cut the human cost. I think you're absolutely right.
God bless. Yes. Yeah, we need to know size on things.
Yes.
Have a good day.
You too. Absolutely. Thanks so much, Alan. One thing before we go back to the phones.
Take a look at is this whole concept of human capital and providing people with opportunities whereby they can perhaps use their creative talents that they bring also not only into this country, but obviously, looking at Honduras and being over there, there's some extremely creative people. Now, the question becomes, can we channel resources, work through the immigration laws in such a way that they can establish the relationships that Dr. Lawrence was saying with the government to really give the people an opportunity other to raise their own economy mm-hmm. in their own country, and then that may sort of, you know, ease the pressure that we're feeling here with people protesting and turning the bus around and worried about them taking, you know, I'm worried about them coming in and perhaps taking over jobs at less pay and stuff like mm-hmm. this. Part of what is also important, I think you realize that for those who are documented, they can also get health insurance in this country. Mm-hmm. Whereas mm-hmm. they cannot get in the country where mm-hmm. they live at. And teach them to do what other immigrants have done in the past also, is to come over and then to send resources back to their country to help the economy. There's nothing that says that these individuals, once they get established, would not go back to Guatemala or El Salvador, unless, of course, we all say once they get here and start making good money, they don't want to go back. Mm-hmm. But there are some. We've met several possessions who went back.
Most people do not want to leave the land they live in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do not want to leave their villages, their cities, their homes, mm-hmm. their families. It's not people leave for economic reasons or political oppression or the dangers to their lives, why people kind of flee mm-hmm. the places they're in. And let me go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Mitchell, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello. As far as Honduras, the United States supported that coup. There's no doubt about that. And as far as taking care of those people economically, the reason they support these coups is so the corporations can exploit them. So
bingo.
There's not much of a chance of the United States having a policy to uplift those countries. That's part of the policy. But what I really want to talk about is this immigration question. I mean, we have to really deal with what's going on. This is about race, those brown people coming here, because there are thousands of people that come from Eastern Europe. And a little while ago, a man was talking about how he came from Ireland, and nobody ever questions anything about what he does. And we have, if the policy was fair and even, then, you know, some of the comments that people made about sending them back, that would be justified. But anybody that comes from Cuba, anybody that comes from there, no matter how many come, they come here, they get everything they want. If you come from Haiti or other country, they send you back. But all these people from Eastern Europe are here, and nobody ever mentions this. This is about these brown people coming across the border, which most of them really have more as much a right to be here than many people, because some of their parents have lived in New Mexico and other places before for hundreds and hundreds of years. So it's really about race, and we have to be really serious about it, because all those people from Eastern Europe are here. Nobody ever talks about it.
I think that's Mitchell, I'm glad you raised it. I think that's a really important point as you were talking about that, and I'll let our guests in the last 5 minutes or so kind of chime in on that as well. There was some interesting pieces that were written moments in the London Times that I'll try to attach to the website here today. It's entitled "Illegal Better If You're Irish." There are 50,000 undocumented Irishmen, Irish folks in the United States, most of them living in New York City. And that there's a lot of sympathy from Irish Americans to the plight of these undocumented. They are at least 3,000 Irish undocumented workers in Washington, D.C. working, and the percentage of those deported is very low.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, and you know, so I think there is this is a factor that we don't want to talk about. And I'm not saying we should deport the Irish workers either. I think we need to come up with a policy that makes sense for people mm-hmm. who are leaving other countries to come here and figure out a way to deal with it. Did you want to say something, Dr. Terry and Dr. Lawrence?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if we want to say that these folks who are coming over are illegal, I think we have to remember that when Europeans first came here, they were illegal aliens who took over land that didn't belong to them and displaced people. And it's actually displacement that actually is at the root of a lot of these issues. When we talk about that woman in Baltimore who needs opportunity, we're talking about segregation that prevented her from gaining opportunity. And we're talking about serial forced displacement, whether it's gentrification, whether it's eminent domain, as in the case of EBDI, or whether it's the dismantling of public housing. The shifting of black folk around urban areas away from farmlands, the great migrations. We can't forget that. Black people moving from the South to the North. Why? For opportunity. Right. And so that's at the heart of what we're talking about is
and fleeing racial terrorism in the South.
Absolutely. that's exactly what they're fleeing. They're fleeing gang terrorism and the lack of opportunity, economic opportunity there. So history is an effective teacher if only we're willing to learn and understand that this economic opportunity, racial violence, if those are the push factors, then what can we do to reduce that violence? What can we do to increase economic opportunity? That's the challenge before us. But we can't do that if we don't have real discussions, like you said, Dr. Terry, to increase democracy and actually make sure that people have opportunity. And I don't just mean that in a sloganeering sense, but I mean that in terms of what about these corporations? We're talking about the crisis of immigration, but there's also a crisis of corporate business practices. Mm-hmm. So the way that we saw Church's Chicken of all places, KFC. I was like, what are they doing here when I went over there? You know, banana plantations, we're importing and exporting all kind of terrible labor practices. And that induces a crisis on the back end that we're seeing now.
And as you all know, a lot of companies are going into poorer countries such as Honduras and El Salvador because of tax reasons.
Right.
They're tired of paying corporate taxes here.
Mm-hmm.
And the tax rate over there is much, much smaller. In fact, I think Fortune magazine came out this week with an article on the base where the headquarters are here, but they're mm-hmm. setting up subsidiaries in smaller countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point is, could they take some of the tax dollars that they are allegedly saving by going to the other country and help build up the economy there? Now, one could argue that when they go over there, they do provide jobs for some of the individuals mm-hmm. who are working there,
mm-hmm.
but they're probably doing it at the minimum wage of that country as opposed to the minimum wage of the United States.
Right.
Okay, which is totally different. And then the other aspect is when we look at what has happened in the past with other immigrants who may have come in and became documented, they immediately start working, such as those who come from Asia, and start talking about family sponsoring people to the country. So why isn't the immigration law looking at the documented
right.
ones coming from Guatemala, mm-hmm. Coming from Honduras, also being able to sponsor their children back into the country mm-hmm. here, okay, similar to what has been done before? And since we're supposed to be the great melting pot, you know, we got things, and we got the anti-trafficking law. We got all sorts of laws that has to be looked at right. and reformed.
Mm-hmm. We are more of a stew than we haven't melted very much, but we are a stew, though, that's for sure. And I think it'd be interesting when we do this another day to hear from you, Dr. Terry, just about the work that you all have done and how important it is, I think, for American students to kind of experience other cultures and places to see what that world is like, because we're so limited by our view of the world. And welcome to Morgan State University.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Raymond Terry, newly hired here at the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University, and he has led health experiential trips for students around the world. One of those trips included Dr. Lawrence Brown.
Last year,
who's a political activist, public health consultant, co-hosting today's show, many shows here on the Mark Steiner Show from here on in, and will be substitute hosting when I'm away as well. It's good to have him on board on our team. He's assistant professor of public health in the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University. Thank you both for being here.
Always a pleasure.
And again, I hope everything is okay. And Lenny McAllister's family, who was going to join mm-hmm. us here for a good rip-roaring discussion debate on immigration policy. Unfortunately, something happened in his family. We really do wish that everything is well in his family and with you. We're going to take a very brief break, and thank you all for calling in and tweeting in with your ideas and thoughts in the course of the hour. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to meet Roger Guinevere Smith, great actor. You've seen him in Spike Lee's movies. He now has an incredible one-man show built around the life of someone that we all know very well, Rodney King. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Something about her was familiar. I could swear I seen her face before. But she said, I'm sure you're mistaken. And she didn't say anything more.